pink whale nuts garage.
Hello, this is That Peter G, and you're here. It's Pink Wheelnuts Garage, and I am the only American in the group tonight, I believe. So I'm the only one that overindulged and ate and drank too much last night for Thanksgiving, and I can barely move this morning and today, and stuffed to the rafters with all kinds of good things. And not in the usual way. So this is That Peter G. And I know Mark is here, and Arthur is here, and Scotty is here. And we're waiting for Faye to come
here
and start the show. Hello, Faye. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Peter. Thank you for opening the show today. Of course, we're missing the co-host emeritus, who is the Laughing Buddha, Mark, from the Scooter Diaries. So he's not able to join us because he, too, is stuffing his face with turkey and other things to imbibe with. So
sausage.
Perhaps. I was thinking more like a dirty martini. In fact, in honor of the Laughing Buddha not being with us today, I am having a dirty martini in his stead.
So you should have told us. We would all have had one.
Oh, yeah.
I just have boring old water right now.
Yeah, me too.
So, thanks, Peter. So, how has your Thanksgiving been, Peter?
It has been overindulgent. And, of course, I cooked for eight people yesterday and got up early in the morning and did all the usual things. And as invariably happens, and this happened to my mother when she cooked Thanksgiving feast and everything, you're there all day cooking, tasting things as you go along. And then by the time everyone sits down and you finally sit down to eat, you are not the slightest bit hungry. But you do manage to cram it all into your pie hole anyway. And that's exactly what happened to me.
Good. Well, good for you, and happy Thanksgiving. We have an ex-American Thanksgiving imbiber, and that's Mark in Canada. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Faye. Thanks for having me tonight.
Do you miss American Thanksgiving?
Not too much. Actually, I'm going to an event this weekend called Yanksgiving. It's a bunch of expatriates. We're going to get together and I'm going to make corn casserole for the first time.
Are you? Is that the famous Brenda Boo corn casserole by any chance?
No, it's from, I think I got the link from, I believe his name is David from the Game Night Boys. And he had a blog where he
Brian.
Yeah. He had a link to this blog from I think it's called angryblackbitch.com.
Right.
And so she had a really good recipe, so I'm going to make that.
Good. Well, across the pond and far, far away from any kind of Thanksgiving festivities, we have Scotty, the little Aussie battler. Hello, Scotty.
G'day, mysterious Faye driver.
Scotty's just back from a vacation. So how was Indonesia?
It was fantastic. I had a really good holiday. Went very slowly, so that's nice.
We're going to grill you a little bit later on in the Pink Wheelnuts Garage show about this vacation you were on and who you were spending it with. So you better get your sling, your shields up for our slings and arrows.
I'm sipping my Lady Grey tea in anticipation.
Oh, very good. Very good. And then finally, to round out our show, this is quite a coup. I feel a little bit like a dictator here. I'm quite happy to announce that my final guest tonight is Arthur from the Amarins podcast. Hello, Arthur in New Zealand. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Now,
and I didn't have Thanksgiving.
Yes, we've heard on your show with that, what's his name? The Archer. I'm going to call him Archer because that's who he is to me, that you don't do Thanksgiving. So I guess you've just had a normal week this week, have you?
Yeah, I had a turkey sandwich for lunch yesterday, though.
Good for you. Just a little nod to your roots, I guess, hey?
Exactly.
Turkey sandwich? Exactly. Yeah, well, that's good. How's everything going in New Zealand?
Well, it was going great, but now it's gotten all cloudy, and I'm very disappointed about that.
Oh, well. Yeah, well, here in Canada, we have no sympathy for you because it's been raining for a few days here, so.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be coming into spring now, and we still have winter weather. I don't think that's fair.
Oh, Well, sorry, we can't, there's, you're not going to get a lot of sympathy here, Arthur.
No, and Scotty will just keep going on about how wonderful the weather is in Brizzy.
Right. It is nice at the moment.
San Francisco, it was about 72 today and not a cloud in the sky.
Hmm, that's a good temperature. How nice.
Scotty, 72 is 22 in our temperature.
Thank you, thank you. There's only one American with the 200-year-old measurements in the room tonight.
We should also acknowledge the people who are in the chat room because we are streaming live right now over pride48.com. You can go and join us in the chat room. We have the Brenda Boo is in there in the chat room. Hello, Brenda. Nice to see you here. And Toppy Smelly joins us as well. So hello to those folks in the chat room. Also, we are going to be talking a little bit about cars tonight. So if you're listening to this on your iPod or iPad or in iTunes, this will be an enhanced podcast so you can see the pictures. When you hear the shutter noise, there'll be a picture so you can see exactly what we're talking about. Just look on your iPad or iPod or iDevice. Well, thanks everyone for joining me tonight. Now, as sort of we do have a bit of a routine we go through here in the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage, because the whole point of the garage is for everybody to come in at the end of a week. I realize it's Saturday in the Southern Hemisphere, but we come into the garage, we grab a drink, and we sit around and we bullshit for a while. So I've already mentioned I'm having a dirty martini in honor of the Laughing Buddha. Is anybody else having a beverage tonight? I'll start with Peter. Peter?
Just water at the moment. It's a little early still. Not quite drinking time, Faye. it needs to be past 6 p.m. to start drinking.
Is that so?
It's only 11 minutes after 4.
Yeah, it's just a little early.
You don't have to have an alcoholic beverage. You can have water. Scotty's having... What kind of tea are you having, Scotty?
Lady Grey.
Lady Grey, yeah.
Because a lady never tells.
I see. Are you gonna take that general stance tonight? Because we're going to be grilling you, my friend, about what's been going on in Indonesia.
No comment.
Arthur, are you having a beverage of any sort?
Coffee and water.
Good for you. Coffee is a... what do they call it? Diuretic. So you want to supplement your coffee drinking with water. Good for you.
Coffee is the finest organic suspension in the universe.
And Mark in Canada?
Just some BC tap water. Nothing too exciting.
Right.
And what are you drinking, Faye?
I'm having my dirty martini, and as a backup, I have a Cosmopolitan waiting in the wings, just in case. Oh. If things don't go well here on the garage tonight, I'll be two-fisting it.
Well, is that Mr. Anderson's making you cocktails?
Oh, no. I have to line them up. I line them up and put them in my fridge. So if you hear non-response from me, it's because I'm making a mad dash to the fridge. I see that Blue Jeans guy has joined us here in the chat room on pride48live.com. So hello, that Blue Jeans guy. And a couple of people have mentioned what they're drinking in the chat room, I think. I'm not going to go back and look. But anyway, so hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me here. We're going to talk about a few topics tonight. Firstly, I just want to acknowledge that about 80% of our guests tonight are from the Commonwealth. And I don't know what we could do to acknowledge that. Maybe we could just call up the Queen and.
Well, I was going to say we could just start with a rousing rendition of God Save the Queen.
Oh, there, yeah, yes. Perfect. Sure. Do you want to start us off, Arthur?
No.
Well, I am going to start in New Zealand, and I'm going to talk to Arthur for a minute here. Arthur, this is the Pink Wheelnuts Garage. We do like to talk a little bit about cars now and then. So I am going to ask you about your situation in your life. What kind of car do you have, and why do you have it? What do you use your car for?
It's a 2001 Honda Civic four-door hatch, which we've had since it was new. Originally, we always lease cars, but this particular one had a financial lease instead of an operational lease. And when the lease was up, it cost, I think, about, I can't remember, $4,000 for a five-year-old car. And we thought, oh, that's a pretty good deal. So we decided to keep it. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I ended up with it. And I just use it for driving around town to go to the grocery store or whatever, run errands, and that's it. And it very seldom even goes on the highway anymore.
So you're basically doing short trips and not that often?
No, actually, not very often at all.
And now, so you're outside of Auckland, is that right?
No, we're in Auckland now.
You're in Auckland?
Yeah, in about 2 years ago, I think it was, was that long? No, last year. Anyway, whatever. They amalgamated Auckland into one large city.
Oh, yes, right.
Councils were merged together. Mm-hmm. And so we used to be in what was called North Shore City, which is the other side of the harbor from what people thought of as Auckland. But now we're all Auckland.
Mm-hmm. I've put a couple of pictures of Arthur's, what I believe Arthur's car to be, in the chat room, because I'm wondering if your Australian Honda Civic is slightly different from our North American Honda Civic.
I think so.
So now, just as an aside, Arthur, how has the amalgamation of all these municipalities, how's it turned out? How's it working?
Well, it kind of depends on who you talk to, because the conservatives were never for it in the first place. Well, actually, that's not true. Some of them were really in favor of it. But there are they don't like to spend money, and amalgamating seven councils into one city has been a very expensive thing to do, because each system had its own rating system. Rates are like property taxes in other countries. Mm-hmm. Each one had its own rating system. Each one had its own customer service system. Each one had its own water billing system, all that sort of stuff, and they all had to be combined into one system. And so that's been a bit of a nightmare. But I think, from my perspective, just as a citizen and ratepayer, that I think it's going really well. There's been a lot of amalgamation that has been really good. Little things like if you go to the library and you check out a book, you can return it to any of the branches anywhere in the city. Whereas before, you had to go back to your home city, and it's just little conveniences like that, I think, make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. So then now let's get back to your little Honda Civic. How has this car treated you? Has it been reliable and good for you?
Yes, it's been very reliable and it's been very good. The reason I'm laughing is because it's the only car in the world that I've ever owned or driven that I've ever had to take to the body shop several times.
Oh, and yeah. Why is this?
Is that from driving on the wrong side of the road?
No, you would think so, but no. It was the first one, the car was still relatively new, and I was backing out from our old house, this is several houses ago now, and there was a big evergreen bush there, and I just thought that I was going to back through the bushes. I didn't realize that there was these branches that were about as thick as somebody's arm, and the wing mirror caught on it and snapped.
Uh-oh.
And so that was flopping around for a couple of years until I got that fixed. It was taped up. And when we moved into this current house, there's there's a retaining wall, but it's got these big steel pillars in a couple of spots because it's extra strong. And I took the corner too tightly and smacked into it. And so I had to have that repaired. And then I just had that done. I think, and I was backing out of the garage to take the rubbish up to the top of the drive. It's a very long drive, and caught the bumper and tore that off. And then somebody hit me. So it's been an adventure, but nothing has happened in 2 years. Knock on
wood. Oh, good.
So it's back to being a good car again.
Well, that's good. Poor little car.
Oh, but I know.
Other than you driving it into things, it sounds like it's been quite reliable.
Yeah, we've had it serviced every year by Honda, so it's been really well maintained, mm-hmm. and hasn't given me any trouble at all.
Well, that's good. Well, good. Well, thanks for sharing your car experience with us. Do you foresee yourself needing to change? Do you see wanting to get rid of this car and getting a different car in the near future, or is this a car you'd keep for a while?
Well, it's 11 years old now, so it is time to start looking at changing it. Even though it does run really well, it's got over 100,000 kilometers on the clock now,
mm-hmm.
so it is time. But we're waiting to see what happens with our house adventure to see,
right,
partly what kind of money we'll have available. So in the meantime, it's we don't owe anything on it, so we might as well just keep going for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a Chrysler 300 is more your style, Arthur.
A what?
Chrysler 300. Do they have those in New Zealand now?
I don't know. I don't know what
Arthur,
that is.
You have to realize, Scotty, that Arthur doesn't know what cars are. He sees them as black cars and brown cars.
And somebody will say, what kind of car does so-and-so drive? And I say, I think it's a blue one.
Yeah.
That's my car knowledge.
So they could very well have Chrysler 300s in New Zealand. But Arthur may not realize. It's kind of a big car, though, isn't it?
An all-American car. He should definitely have it before Thanksgiving next year.
Do you miss large North American cars, Arthur?
Absolutely not. No. My very first car was a 1971 Buick LeSabre, which was, you could land aircraft on the hood of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then my next one was a 77 Buick Skylark, manual, the only manual car I've ever owned. And it was much smaller. And ever since then, it's been getting smaller still. I mean, Nigel drives, what do you call them in North America? SUVs, I think.
Uh-huh, and yes.
And it's too big. I won't drive it.
Oh. Hmm. Do you know what kind of SUV he has?
Yes, he has a Skoda Yeti.
Oh. I see. Okay, yeah. It's a small SUV.
Well, I suppose. It's a bit smaller than the Honda CRV.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's made by Volkswagen. But it was the, when they were first being introduced, and so they were higher spec than the equivalent Volkswagen, which I can't remember what that was called. Yeah. And so Volkswagen changed it and said, no, the Skodas have to be lower spec than the Volkswagens.
Now, well, what do you say when you mean lower spec? What is this terminology?
The interiors can't be as good. The engine can't be as good.
Oh, I see. Yes. Okay.
Pieces.
I understand. So this
is their model year, which is 2010, I think, better than the 2011 and beyond.
So it's a knockoff of the Volkswagen Touareg, I believe.
Yeah.
Right.
It was essentially made the same way, but it was, I think it was actually, they were built in Czechoslovakia, if I remember correctly. Right. The Czech Republic.
Yes.
And they're owned by Volkswagen, and they decided that they wanted to have the Volkswagen be the really good car, and then that would be sort of poor cousin.
Right, sure. Which is, that's fairly common these days with brands. They, a lot of cars are made, a lot of cars are similar, and depending on who has the badge, they do this kind of thing. They make one very nice and very expensive. And they say, you can't make a nicer one than we've got, right? Which is what has happened with your Yeti.
Now, I see that Scotty posted a picture of a Chrysler 300 in the chat room. And looking at it, it looks like some other car that's sold here. And I can't think of what it's called, like a Dodge something or other.
Oh, yeah.
Are they the same company, Dodge and Chrysler?
Yes, they are.
Chrysler or something like that, I think. I haven't actually looked at Chrysler cars here, so I'm not really up with what they are.
Yeah, it's $47,716 in Australia, according to Scotty. That's a lot for a car.
That's the base model. I think.
Yeah.
But cars are very expensive in Australia. Like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. Arthur, are cars, is New Zealand the same? Are you ripped off for cars? And do you also get the kind of dumbed down model, like the identical Mazda 3 in Australia is totally different to the Asian Mazda 3 or the American Mazda 3, like it has lower specs and less things inside it?
Well, I've never done any comparison shopping. Most of what we have, well, apart from Holden's, which is Australian General Motors, for Americans who don't know, is we get Japanese and European models primarily. It's very rare for us to get anything that's actually American here. The only one I can actually remember that was assembled in the U.S. and sold here was the Ford Taurus, which was built in, apparently. But I don't think that any of our cars are assembled in North America. I think they're all made in Europe or Japan or Australia. Actually, Korea too, do. Yeah.
I just want to say Moose has joined us in the chat room as well. Well, thank you, Arthur. Thanks for talking about your cars and your New Zealand oddities and things like that. I'm going to move on because I want to address this topic about the election in the USA. As many of us know, we've just had an election in the U.S. where President Obama was reelected. And, you know, I'm always interested in conspiracy theories. And for the people who are on the call with me tonight, I sent an article to you all. And this article was actually brought to my attention by Moose P, in fact.
Oh.
Thank you, Moose. About the possible attempt of the Republicans to steal the election.
No, I don't believe it.
I've put a link into the chat room to the article for those who are listening with us right now, and I'll put this link in my lyrics notes on the show. Does anybody want to take this on? Who would like to take this on and talk about this? Any takers here?
Well, I'm sure that Arthur and the rest of you probably have a more detailed factual take on this, but I think for me, the Republicans have gotten such a poor reputation in terms of elections. They always seem to be trying to change the votes or trying to control the votes, and they have I don't think it speaks very well of their dominance, because I think I should say it seems like their position is slipping and they're being sore losers, and the only way that they think that they can win elections is not by appealing to the majority but trying to rig the results.
So just before we get into this too far, just let me describe what the article says in very brief terms. A company that was contracted to be the backup calculator, the company that does all the counting of all the votes, they're the backup company in case the original company had a problem and their servers crashed or something. This backup company handles the tallying of all of the votes as they come in across the country. And Karl Rove was on CNN, and the CNN pundits called it that Obama had won, but it was 11 o'clock. And at about 11:05 or 11:14, the servers crashed mysteriously, and the polling switched over to the backup servers, who were owned by
Romney.
Romney, thank you. So And then mysteriously, after 11:14, the votes in Ohio, because those were the last college to come in, the votes started to mysteriously and fantastically show an increase for Romney. So the author of this article is saying that Romney's family is rigging the votes after they took over the control of the servers at 11:14. And also they point to mysteriously in the last election, almost the identical thing happened at almost the identical time in the last election where the election turned mysteriously at 11:15 in the evening, the votes all started coming in for Bush. So that's the thrust of the article. Arthur, you were going to say?
Well, one of the things about that is the allegation that the hacktivist group Anonymous knew that this was going on, that they had already infiltrated the Republican computer systems and had put up a firewall that they couldn't get past in order to prevent them from stealing the election. Mm-hmm. And one of the allegations the article makes is that this is why Karl Rove went nuts, literally, on Fox News, because he knew that this was going to happen, that the fix was in, yeah, and that the election was going to turn and Ohio was going to go for Romney. Not that ultimately it would have made any difference anyway, but it did in 2004. The only reason why George W. Bush got a second term was because Ohio went for him. And the allegation has always been that they stole the election that year, which I happen to believe, by the way. However, the problem with this particular thing is that just because a thing is plausible and even maybe probable doesn't mean it's actually true. Without some proof, it's the sort of thing that could be true. But I always caution people in a situation like this to not necessarily assume that because something could be true that it is true. And if Anonymous really did do this, they really need to release the proof. Because if this is true, then Karl Rove will go to prison for the rest of his life. But if it's not true, then it's an interesting little story, the tinfoil hat sort of realm or whatever. But this isn't the big thing. The big thing is that the Republicans do this sort of thing all over the country. They do – some of it is above board, where they pass laws to try to make it difficult for Democrats to vote. And sometimes they do it through voter intimidation, putting up signs in African-American neighborhoods telling them that voter fraud is a felony and they could go to prison for 5 years or whatever it is, and to intimidate African-Americans so they don't go to the polls. So it does. The thing about this whole story that for me is the real tragedy is that I believe it could be true. I mm-hmm. wish I could say there's no way that this is true, that they're not capable of that, they wouldn't do that sort of thing. But yeah, they kind of could.
Right.
Yeah, I certainly don't put it past them. Ethically speaking, they don't have any ethics to speak of. So yeah. I think – and he, you're right. He really did go crazy on Fox News. I mean, he was so sure that this was going to be a different result in Ohio. And you're right. The Republicans don't try to win voters. They try to pick the voters that are going to give them the elections. Like they want to narrow it down as to the narrowest – base of voters possible so that they can win. They don't have any ideas that'll win over a majority, so they try to lessen the total number of people voting. So they're just it's a really cynical thing, and I don't put it past them, and I think it possibly could be true. It's another reason why, like, the Electoral College, say, should be done away with, in my opinion, because now we're all waiting every 4 years for what Ohio does. And suddenly Ohio has all of this importance and relevance. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot easier to fix the results, if that is the case, in one state or in one county or five counties in a state than it is to fix a whole national vote. So I think it's another reason to get rid of the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, then that would also take away the reason for them to try to do voter suppression efforts as well, because if you need to have a national 50% plus one of the total vote or whatever, if it's a two-person race, then there's no real incentive to try to suppress vote in your own state, because you're going to be drowned out somewhere else.
Right.
Any other thoughts from other people on the panel?
I thought the article was a bit boring at this for the first half until it got to the bit where it's said about Anonymous intervening, and I thought, oh, maybe there is something to this. But at the start, I was thinking, oh, it's just a conspiracy theory, and everybody kind of knows that American politics is totally corrupt, and so I don't know. Yeah, to me, it's believable, but probably I'm too distant from it to judge that accurately.
Do you think there's any solution to the Electoral College situation?
It has to be abolished.
Yeah. Is that feasible, though? Is it something that could possibly occur?
Well, no. I think you'd need a constitutional amendment, and that's never realistically going to happen. So,
no, but yeah. It's in the Republicans' advantage to not abolish the Electoral College, right? Because the only way they can win is if they manage to steal enough states. Because the Republicans' biggest enemy is time. Their party is old white men, primarily. Mm-hmm. And as they die off and they're replaced by younger, browner people, who very often are female as well, they've got a real problem on their hands. And the only way that they can win elections is by stealing them. And the only way they can steal an election is if the Electoral College exists. So they have a really strong incentive to keep it going.
Right. Is anybody else concerned by the amount of money that the two big parties in the U.S. spend on these election campaigns, and the fact that they campaign, starting the day after the last election? Any thoughts on this?
I think
there's already people going to Iowa to appear in Iowa, probably say hello to Brenda and then shake a few hands. You know, like Marco Rubio, that senator from Florida, is already over there.
I think they should do more what we do, where the actual party picks the person that's going to run for president. I know it's different because in Canada and the UK and New Zealand, the party that wins the election, well, whoever it is, the head of the party.
Their leader.
Becomes the prime minister. But I think because basically there's only two parties in America anyway, so they could do a similar thing where the Republican Party and the Democrats actually choose, right, this is the person we're going to run for president, that's it. Instead of having like 2, 3, 4, 5 people all battling against each other, putting everyone down, you know, saying, oh, Hillary's crap, oh, blah, 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 you know, you kind of basically dissing your own party members while you fight for the chance to be the president, and then supposedly when it gets down to only the last person, then you're all friends again and, oh, Hillary's amazing, and just wait, now when we win the election, well, she's going to get a really high post, even though 6 months ago she was crap and she'd make the worst president in the world. You know, it's just, and all the money that they're raising and wasting while they can basically fight with their own party. It's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
Mark?
I don't know. Again, Arthur would probably know the history of this, like how we got to this historically. I mean, how did we set up this system that is so dysfunctional? Like, where did the Electoral College come from? Where did all of this, because I can't imagine this is what the founding fathers, you know, envisioned for us, is it?
Well, they never saw that the U.S. was going to get as big as it did. They had a lot of foresight in a lot of ways, but that wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
But the system was deliberately set up the way it is because they didn't trust the mob, the masses. They thought that if the people actually got the full say, that you would end up with the tyranny of the majority. And that's why there's so many safeguards built into the Constitution to prevent the majority from imposing its will on the minority. And so what they wanted to do was to slow down the election process so that the passions of the day wouldn't put some demagogue or somebody in the presidency. Right. And that's why originally the people did not elect U.S. senators. That was done by state legislatures. And the only people who could vote for president for white men over 25 who own property.
Yeah.
My late uncle, that was a good idea.
There are elements of today's Republican Party that would be happy to go back to that system, too. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
They come out right out and say that senators shouldn't be elected by the people, that they should be elected by a legislature, or that if you don't own a house, then you shouldn't be able to vote in an election. So they're very happy with those ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although historically, the whole history of voting in the U.S. has been about extending voting rights, never taking them back. So there's no way that they would ever be able to take away the right to vote from anybody. But theoretically, if they got control of enough state legislatures and both houses of Congress, they could amend the Constitution to repeal whichever amendment it was that made the election of senators direct. I can't remember which one off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, that could happen. But I don't see that being the case, because that would be an incredibly unpopular thing for them to try.
Hmm. So you don't see us ever going to just a straight majority vote?
For president?
Or for anything. Yeah, I guess specifically for president, but any election... I guess some elections are a majority, but especially for president.
You know, Mark, that some states, a couple of states, Maine and Nebraska, I believe, they allocate their electoral votes in a different manner. They do it by congressional district, and there's nothing that says a state can't do that. And I thought, well, maybe that's an alternative, so they could allocate, each state could allocate votes by electoral district, by congressional district. So a Republican might pick up a few votes in California, or a Democrat might pick up a few votes in Texas, and it might actually have a moderating influence on these people, that they say, oh, well, you know, there's 10 votes available, realistically speaking, for me from California, where there wouldn't be before, so maybe I should modulate my positions a little bit, or the same with a Democrat in Texas or in parts of the South, too. So I mean, they could... they don't have to award them winner take all, and it could be just done by a congressional district. That might, you know, bring some kind of calming influence to it, maybe.
Right.
Well, it would be a step in the right direction, but ultimately it's not really going to help things, because congressional districts are drawn by state legislatures, and they draw them to the advantage of whichever party happens to control the legislature at that time. Right. If you look at the popular vote in the 2012 elections, Democrats should have a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. The reason they don't is because in the 2010 elections, Republicans took control of state legislatures all over the country and drew the maps to favor Republicans. That's the only reason why John Boehner is Speaker of the House right now, or will be in the new Congress, I should say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to get rid of many different – you got to reform many parts of that process.
Yeah. And that's another thing they could do. They could require that congressional districts are drawn by an independent, nonpartisan commission that looks at actual representation and not party balance, and in effect make it illegal for them to even consider party balance when they're doing
Which is what happened, Arthur, in California this year. The commission drew the lines, and a lot of Republicans lost their seats in California as a result of it, because they weren't buffeted into these secure boundaries.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. I just know these issues come up every 4 years, and you know, around election time, when the average person is part of this process, and everyone kind of looks at each other like, why is this so antiquated, and why is this the way it is? And then it kind of dies down, and then it comes up again every 4 years. But, you know, nothing is ever done, and I don't know. Maybe there's nothing that can be done.
Well, I think a lot of people don't really understand how the system works anyway. A lot of people actually think that they're voting for president, and they're not. Anybody who casts a ballot on election day for the person they want to be president, it's basically like a taxpayer-funded public opinion poll, because there's nothing in the Constitution that requires that electors vote for the person who won their state or their district in the case of Maine and Nebraska. They can vote for whoever they want to, and they sometimes do.
Yeah, it's a very confusing situation. Yeah, I think it's well beyond my understanding, and I'm probably not alone.
Mm.
And it should be a system that the average person can understand. And because I think that the way it's set up now, so many people are disillusioned and don't think that their vote counts, and it probably doesn't, depending on what state they live in.
If
you live in California, it probably doesn't matter if you vote for Mitt Romney or Obama. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. One of the problems is that the way the system is set up, I mean, all elections are supposed to be one person, one vote. Mm-hmm. But the way the system is set up, certain states like Wisconsin and Ohio and Iowa and Florida and Virginia, they count a lot more than anybody else's votes. And that's not fair and it's not right. It's not logical. It's not moral. It's not any of that stuff. And the only cure is to abolish the Electoral College, because then it would be whoever gets the most votes wins. But that's right. that's not far enough, in my opinion. There also needs to be a proportional voting system, ideally. Now, that's not going to happen. But at the very least, there has to be a ranking system for voting so that there are no wasted votes. As the system is now in a first-past-the-post system, which is what you call that when whoever has the most votes wins, you end up with a huge amount of votes that are thrown away. They're completely wasted. Everybody who votes for Ralph Nader in 2000, 2004, whenever he ran, was a wasted vote. Every vote for whoever, what's her name, Jill Stein this year, was a wasted vote. In a good system, that wouldn't be the case. You might say, I want Jill Stein for president, but if she doesn't get enough, then I want my votes to go to Barack Obama. Or on the right, it might be, I want my votes to go for Mitt Romney. If he doesn't get enough, then I want it to go for that libertarian guy's name, Greg Johnson or whatever it was. That sort of thing. That's what Australia does for their Senate, I think it is. Probably correct me on that. In the U.S., they do it in certain local elections. It's usually called instant runoff voting in the U.S.
We do it for both.
I thought the House was different than the Senate.
Are you talking about preferential voting, Arthur?
Yeah.
I missed the beginning of what you said. So, yeah, no, both. It's in both elections. So you can either, when you're voting, just put a one in the party that you vote, the person that you're voting for, and then whatever they've decided their preferences will go to the other parties. Or you can number, like if there's 15 or 5 people, you can put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Or in the Senate, there's like 80 or something, you can number like 1 to 80. Or you can just put a one basically under the person and the party that you are voting for. So it's up to you. If that makes sense.
I'm gonna bring this discussion to a close here on the Electoral College and the American election. And we're gonna point the spotlight over to Australia and Scotty the little Aussie battler. Now, Scotty.
Yes.
You've been away on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time you were gone, you were tweeting like crazy.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, I think you were.
Well, and tweeting like crazy for you actually means 2 tweets in a day. And then you're flying into a rage and about to go and punch Brenda Boo. So I probably was tweeting like crazy on the Faye scale.
Perhaps.
I saw quite a lot of tweets from Scotty, and they were always accompanied by a picture of some lithe young boy or, you know, young gentleman. So I think that's what you're referring to, Faye, right?
Well, it's very interesting that you should make that observation, Peter. So tell us, Scotty, just exactly who was it that you were splashing all over the internet there on your tweets?
Canoodling.
I can't remember. There's probably a couple of people.
I'll tell you who. It's Yoppy.
Oh, Yoppy.
So now what's going on with you and Yoppy? Not only that, but I suspect you escorted him from wherever you were to... You took a little private little trip somewhere else, too.
Yes, it wasn't really, it wasn't actually that private because... So I met... Well, I don't know. Where should I start, Faye? It's such a complicated... It's like switching suddenly into an episode of TMZ.
Oh. Well, just tell us. You went back to Indonesia. Where did you go specifically?
Right. I flew into Bali. I spent one night at Spartacus Gay Resort, clothing optional.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you.
You scamp, you.
Well, you want the breaking news. This is going to get your ratings up in the old statistics this week, isn't it?
All right. Yeah, go for it. Let's
however,
tell it all.
I chose the option of clothing on.
Oh.
Because, you know.
But you were surrounded by dozens of little Indonesian boys who were clothing off.
No. Because it's all... I went with a friend from here, an old uni friend, and he was staying in this resort because we got the cheap airfares, buy one, get one free. So he was going to stay there the whole time. And because our plane landed at 9 o'clock at night, I thought, well, it's too late to go anywhere else, so I'll stay one night. So I stayed one
night. Which turned into two or three or?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't really like Bali because it's full of Yobbo Australians. And hoons on motorbikes. So I spent one night in the clothing optional resort. I kept my clothing on. My friend who I was traveling with did not keep his clothing on when he was swimming in the pool, and I did have to divert my eyes quite a lot. I did not want to see Prince Albert, which I knew was down in that direction. So then I flew to Yogyakarta, where I met a lovely boy that I've been chatting to for about 6 months called Joe.
Mm.
And spent one night in Jogja and then went back to his hometown about an hour away the next day and spent 4 days in Klaten with him, hanging out, you know, just wandering around, seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
That was very nice. So that was my romantic interlude of the holiday.
Uh-huh.
4 days with Joe. I very interestingly, on one day, he took me to a kind of a gay safe house, which was kind of a little bit out in the sticks from where he lived, which is this old Christian grandmother who has twin boys and a girl, and both of the boys were gay. So she basically, they're now adults. So, but in the, I guess the hard kind of life they had growing up, she now with her daughter has just kind of an open house mm-hmm. where anyone who's gay that knows where this house is can basically go there and hang out.
Much like the, we had these sorts of places in the 50s and 60s in North America.
Oh.
Particularly during the war, where okay. the boys who might be off fighting or would get shore leave would come to you know, places like these where they would be hosted by generous older men and they'd be able to relax, quote unquote. But don't let me interrupt you. Carry on.
So that was quite cool to see that, and I had never kind of imagined that being in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left there and got the bus down to Malang, where I was here. You may remember.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Your old stomping grounds.
Very annoyingly, the minibus that was driving me there arrived 3 hours early.
Uh-oh.
Itself is a miracle for Indonesia. But this time was a slight inconvenience because it meant I got there at 3 a.m. and I was left on the side. In front of the university at 3 a.m.
So you just waited around for Yopi to meet you at 6?
Yopi came and picked me up on the motorbike, and I thought, oh, you're still as cute as ever, and took me home to sleep.
Just a minute now. It appeared to me that you and Yopi were hanging out at some sort of a gay club. Is this correct?
So I hung out in Malang for a few days, caught up with some old students, didn't really do much with Yopi because he was doing his teaching prac. And so we went to Lombok, which is the island next to Bali, a little bit less touristy. And that's where I met up with my friend from uni, again, who'd been in Bali the whole time at the gay resort. And then we hung out, 3 days? Or 3 nights in Lombok with Yopi and me and my other Aussie friend. At times, I did have to intervene from him groping Yoppy inappropriately and making Yoppy feel like he was about to be raped. And had a very nice time. Just a nice little holiday with Yoppy. And yes, Yoppy did. Now, who was it that posted the other day for the picture? Was it Peter G? Who posted about Yoppy looking with alluring eyes? Or was it Mark? Somebody.
Oh, that was me. Yeah. He does. He has that look on his face like, you want me, don't you? And maybe it's just the way his face is, but don't you think?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit depressing when you're there, too.
But he's definitely flirtatious.
Who was showing someone the photos, and they were like, how come there's all these Indonesian boys with their clothes off? And I was like, they're not teenage. They're 20-something-year-old boys. They're obsessed with, like, it doesn't really translate in English, but it's kind of narcissistic. So they're totally obsessed with taking their photo, posing, ripping their shirt off, posing. Oh, no, take me now at this angle. Okay. And so when I've got a good camera on my iPhone as opposed to their crappy Nokia 10-year-old cameras, they're like, take a photo of me now. Oh, wait, let me change position. Okay, now take another photo of me. So Yoppy was like, oh, I'm Scott, take my photo. Oh, wait, okay, now without my sunglasses. Okay, now get one of my brown skin, rips his shirt off. So it was quite funny, but that's very Indonesian. And unfortunately, it wasn't the secret come online that I was dreaming of for the past 2 years.
So now, just for clarification, were you or were you not at some sort of a gay party with Yoppy? Yeah.
So after Lombok, we went back to Bali for 2 nights. And on one of those nights, our hotel was actually 100 meters down the road from the 4 gay bars in Bali, mm-hmm. which was an accident. On the first night we were there, we were walking past them, and I didn't know they were there, and Yoppy nearly got dragged into one of them, so it kind of freaked him out.
What do you make of this character, this Yoppy guy? Is he gay or not? Like, or is he just a narcissistic kid?
He is not gay. Yeah, he's just narcissistic. And he had it was quite good this holiday, because when I was in Malang, he was always super busy studying. So we had heaps of time to kind of chat. Mm-hmm. Nice. So, I suggested to Yoppy the great idea of him pretending to be my lifelong partner, so he went to Australia and get his, residency and citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he basically was like, "No way."
Well, mystery solved then, I guess. Well, that's good. I'm glad. It sounds like you had quite a lovely time, Scotty. I think you deserved it after the few years you've had. So right. do you feel refreshed?
Yes, it went really, I don't know why, much into 2 weeks, but it seemed like a really slow holiday, so that was nice.
Good. All right. Well, thank you for sharing your experiences with us. We appreciate it. And congratulations on your romantic interlude with Joe.
Yeah, that's probably on the skids now, but anyway, you get that.
Love is fleeting. Okay, let's move on, folks. We're coming to the end of our show here. Just quickly now, I want to talk to Peter G about your issues with your car, Peter. You
All right.
had a problem with your fan or your heating system or something like that. I'd like to hear what prompted you did you take it in because there was a problem with the fan, or you were in getting a normal service? What's the story here?
Faye, it's actually related to the other problem I spoke to you weeks ago about, which was the tire pressure indicator light.
Yes.
And it had been going on again as if to say that there's a tire that's low. When there never is, and I took it in and I told them to recalibrate it as they have done every time I take it in for 5 years.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we've received an advisory from Nissan that this is related to the blower fan for your heater and air conditioner. Uh-huh. And somehow you have to change out the blower motor, and that will resolve your tire pressure indicator sensor problem. And so they said it's not a recall because it's not considered a safety or something like that. So that it says it's one step below a recall. So we can't do it for free, and it's like $700. And I was like,
$700.
Yeah, I balked at that because I think it should be, if it's a defect, and I think the tire pressure indicator light is kind of a safety issue. I mean, if I'm running around on low tires, then I have less maneuverability and less control of the vehicle, don't I? So I refused to do that, and I just didn't get it changed out. And I said, no, every time this happens, I'm gonna bring it in, and you're just going to recalibrate it, because that is the thing that you will do for free. And so just get ready to recalibrate it all the time, because that will last about 3 or 4 months then, and then it has to be recalibrated again. So that's where it is with that.
But don't they charge you to recalibrate?
No, it's a part of my warranty. So oh, mm-hmm. I still get that for free. And so what do you think about that, Faye? How could that those things possibly be related? They seem so dissimilar.
Yeah, it does seem very dissimilar, but is it the low pressure warning, the tire low pressure warning light that's coming on, or is it a generic warning light?
It's the tire pressure light. So either it's saying as if something is underinflated or perhaps overinflated, some tire, and they have to keep recalibrating it. It's confusing to me too.
Are you experiencing problems with your blower motor? Or they just said, oh, yeah, it's because your blower motor's faulty, but you're not having any problems with it.
I'm not having any problems with it, no.
Yeah. Well, you know, who knows? Everything is so computerized these days. It seems unlikely to me that your tire pressure light should come on when there's some other fault with the computer. I mean, I could see the check engine light coming on if the blower motor is doing something weird, but you're not even really experiencing any problems with your blower motor, right?
Right. So no, it seems to be fine.
They call these things technical service bulletins, TSBs, and so obviously Nissan has published a technical service bulletin on your blower motor fan, because who knows what the issue is, and we can actually find out what that TSB is. I'll do a bit of research for you, and we'll try to see exactly what that is. Not right this instant, but I'll get back to you maybe in a later show.
Thank you.
It's weird to me. It's bizarre to me, and I'm glad you didn't spend $700 on it, because if it's just a bad blower fan, you should be able to buy a blower fan for about $120. Mm-hmm. Sometimes putting them in is quite difficult, because they are buried deep within the dash, under the dash.
Right, that's what they indicated, that they have to take the whole front dashboard out and put this thing in, and that's why it was so much.
Yeah, I can see them charging a lot for labor for that. It's a possibility. If nothing's wrong, unless the thing is going to burst into flames and explode, that could be. But if that's the situation, that should definitely be covered under a recall issue, right? But if it's just a little bit of a wonky fan motor, then I would be frustrated if I were you, and it sounds like you might be.
Exactly, because I think that it's potentially a safety problem if I'm running around with underinflated tires, and if this thing is blinking at me, but I don't believe it anymore because it's like the light that cried wolf all the time. So I ignore it, and then I have an issue with my tires. because the faulty blower motor is causing this light to go off, and I'm just disregarding it. So I think it. Next time I go back, I'm gonna make another stink about it, because I think that should be replaced, but that they should pay for it.
Yeah, you know they're going to say that the tire pressure monitor is not a safety device; it's a convenience device, and you should be visually checking and manually checking your tire pressure every day to confirm that your pressure is okay. So they're not going to buy this argument from you that the tire pressure monitor is a safety device, because it's not. It's an option, and you have it because they're not going to go for that. So you're shit out of luck on that.
Okay.
That argument, I think. But depending on what the TSB is, you could maybe pressure them to pay for that. But let me do a bit of research and see if I can figure out exactly what the issue is.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, in any case, this brings to a close the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage for tonight, everybody. I want to thank the guests who are with me here on the call. I'll give them an opportunity to promote their shows in a minute here. But before we leave, I just want to say thank you to those of the people who've joined us in the chat room tonight. We have Brenda Boo. This is the Pride 48 chat room. Brenda Boo is here. Hello, Brenda. Guru Nudi has joined us. He's just been released from hospital prison with a new full hip replacement, and he seems to be doing well. I think he was out shopping in Target today or somewhere. So he's getting around and doing well after his hip replacement. So our thoughts are with you, Guru Nudi. We have a Mib in the room. Moose P is here, who was a contributor to one of our topics tonight, who cued me into the vote stealing by the Republicans. Thanks for being here, Moose. And Tara is here, that blue jeans guy, and Toppy Smelly are joining us as well. So hello to those people. All right, so let's go around the room. We'll give you each a chance to tell us about what show or where we might be able to find you. Mark in Canada.
Yes, based on my stellar performance tonight, I'm sure people will want to listen to my podcast. It's Musings
of a
Tech
Writer.
We
are enjoying. I'm sure I'll speak for everybody. We're enjoying the NADPOD POMO Musing Mark shows that are coming out. Just tell us briefly what your theme is this month.
Yeah, the month is almost up, but I'm posting 30 memories of my life over 30 days. And we're up into the 20s when I'm in my 20s. So just a little story, usually less than 5 minutes. So check it out. I'm also on iTunes. And I'm on Twitter, Musing Mark. Thank you.
And the music is great, by the way, in Mark's NADPOD POMO episodes. So all around, a great bit of podcasting.
Oh, thank you.
And Scotty, the little Aussie battler, are you going to grace us with an actual podcast and tell us more about what went on in Indonesia?
Well, the podcast was defunct, but due to the fact of a certain little me voice from the musing Canadians in the room, I did do two interviews with Yopi while I was away.
Oh.
Yay. All right.
Boring, actually, I realized. But anyway, so I probably will post those sometime in the next amount of time.
Yeah, let's at least hear his voice.
And where can we find that? If and when you post them, where would they be?
They will be at littleaussiebattler.net.
All right. And Arthur, how may we find you?
Well, you can basically get to all of my stuff at amerinz.com, amerinz.com. It has links to, well, actually, it doesn't have a link to Arthur and Paul Talk. It has linked to my other podcasts and blog and YouTube channel and blah, 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 blah.
Right. That is your portal to your other,
it
all
is
your other shows.
The magic door to everything I do.
Right. And I am the Faye Driver. You're listening to the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage. I also do the Pink Wheel Nuts podcast whenever I bloody well feel like it at pinkwheelnuts.com. And my final guest tonight, and the man who will have the last word, is that Peter G. Where can we find you, sir?
Thank you, Faye. I'm on the little show called Lots of Life on the Shit List, which you can find on iTunes at under LOTSL and lifeontheshitlist@gmail.com, or you can call us on our phone line at 949-41-LOTSL, 949-41-LOTSL, and you can tweet me at ThatPeterG on the Twitter. Thank you.
Pink Whale Nuts Garage.